And it gives me great pleasure to introduce Kendall Sieve from Orchid.
Hi everyone, I'm Kendall, I'm an alcoholic. I'm so nervous. Thank you all for being here. It means so much to me. I don't think I've been behind a podium in a bit. My first time speaking up here was at 7 months sober. And then I've done a little 10 minute at South County, so this will be my third time speaking. I do have a sobriety date. My sobriety date is January 6th of 2024. So I have a little over 2 years sobriety. My home group is the Wednesday night women's meeting that my mom has in our home. So it's my actual like home group. And I do have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor, and I am in constant contact with her every single day. And you know, before I get started, I went kind of back and forth if I should pre-prepare for this or just let God speak through me. And I decided to trust in God, had some conversations with him, and you know, want him to use me. So I hope what I share tonight is able to reach one of you. And if not, I apologize in advance. I got this card the other day, so I want to start by reading this, and then I'll get into my pitch. This is the complete serenity prayer. God, give us grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. Taking as Jesus did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. Okay, guys, so let's get into it. What it was like. I was born on January 8th, 1997, to parents that were alcoholics and addicts. I always make a little joke that when my mom was in labor with me, they gave her some drugs for that, and they explained my birth as me popping out like a champagne cork. And I was like, oh my gosh, did they just speak it into existence that I was going to be an alcoholic? Come to find out, I'm allergic to morphine, so that's why I came out so quick. But I was born to two addict alcoholic parents. I have a really great family surrounding me. Unfortunately, due to their diseases, my parents were not able to take care of me on their own, but I had a wonderful aunt who stepped in when I was 5 years old and raised me as her own with her boys. So I grew up with my cousins. And I don't know the exact age because my mind just doesn't remember when I was that young. I think it's partially because my brain and God are protecting me from that part of my life. Maybe I'm not strong enough to know yet, or maybe I never will know. But what I do remember is at a very young age, don't know which age specifically, I just didn't, not that I didn't want to live, but I just didn't see a purpose in living, and I felt that very, very young. I never felt like the people that said they loved me actually loved me. I remember not feeling comfortable in my own skin very early on, and I just had something inside of me that wasn't right or okay, and I couldn't name that feeling for a really long time. I didn't have the best childhood growing up. Like I explained, I didn't live with my parents, but there was just a lot of dysfunction, a lot of chaos, and it wasn't the best situation or circumstances for kids, which is why I was moved. With my aunt, it wasn't like that, but I saw the glorified side of alcoholism. So I've been surrounded by alcoholism my entire life. I saw the negatives, which is why I wasn't with my mom. And then I saw the glorified side of it for my aunt and uncle. They are also alcoholic. However, they've never had any negative attached to their alcoholism. They've never been in any trouble. They've never had things taken from them or removed from them. So I was very conflicted how to feel about alcoholism as a whole. I swore from a very young age that I was never going to touch alcohol or drugs. or do a single thing because this is going to sound bad, but I didn't want to be how my parents were. I didn't want to, when I was a parent, to not have my kids in my life. So I swore off it at a very young age. Life obviously happened because I'm in here today, but we'll get to there. When I was young, I remember, again, like I said, just not feeling comfortable in my own skin, not being able to place the feelings that were inside of me. And I've always been a very anxious child. I have really bad anxiety. I also struggle with depression and some mental health problems as well. And I always surrounded myself with people that would take from me. I didn't know the company I was keeping at the time, but I am a very big giver, so I would give everything to everyone, neglect myself, but I was at least with people. I wasn't alone, or so I thought. But I also am one that's not good with setting boundaries, even in sobriety. I'll be honest about that. But so growing up, I just didn't always have the best group of friends. I didn't have a ton of friends. I have moved around a lot in my life. I think I've counted and I've moved like 16 times in my 29 years of living. I have lived with family members other than my aunt and my uncle for a short period of my life. And I remember when I was young and living with them, they took us in, but they let me know that they were doing something for me. And they didn't let me forget that they were doing that for me. So I remember feeling just very not comfortable in that situation. And as a young girl, I just didn't know how to respond to people like that. And I always found myself rebelling and getting into trouble, not with drugs or alcohol, but my behaviors and my reactions and my responses to situations. Fast forward a little bit. When I was 12 years old, my aunt and I had a talk, and I told her that I wanted to go back and live with my mom. And I didn't want to hurt her feelings by telling her that, but my mom had been sober for a little bit of time around this time. And a girl just needed to be with her mom. You know, she was able to care for us. So we went to court. My aunt at the time had custody of us, legal custody of me, my sister, and my brother. And I had to go to court on behalf of us three. And because I was the oldest one, I was able to speak on behalf of all three of us. And sixth grade summer, moved back with my mom. It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows when I moved back. I didn't realize how difficult it would be for my mom to now navigate not only sobriety and working, but also having to care for three children that she hadn't had in a bit of time. And I think just expectations got to me, and I expected things to be perfect and sunshine and beautiful and have no issues when moving back with my mom, and that just unfortunately wasn't the case. My mom had to make the tough decision to leave her job because she just couldn't juggle all of it at the same time. She was very active in sobriety. I was raised in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have been coming to meetings since I was this big. I would always go in the other room and make up little cheer dances and like be singing in the other room and run out here whenever you guys were praying out. And I loved going to the Alano Club. That was my spot as a little girl. I just remember like seeing how active she was in sobriety. I didn't realize it in that moment, but that was a core memory for me that I used when I came into sobriety. But as a child, I was very, very resentful. I didn't understand why things weren't how I expected them to be. I had a lot of unresolved trauma and anger at my mother, and I didn't purposely take it out on her, but this program has taught me that my reaction is my part sometimes. And I reacted really negatively to a lot of things. Partially because of, like I said, the situation isn't what I was expecting it to be, and part of it being I had unresolved things inside of me that I still didn't know why or what was happening, and the feelings that I was feeling. So yeah, I wasn't the best little girl. And I remember during that time, because my mom wasn't able to work and she had to take care of us, we weren't the best off financially. We really struggled on that front. We had to live with other people to keep a roof over our head. We lived in people's garages just to keep us all together. I remember we would not go to the shelter specifically, but that's only because we had such great people in our life that would step in and take us in, Amber being one of them and a few other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I still just didn't understand. I thought when someone got sober, their life was just perfect now. It was just the drinking that was the problem, and that's just not reality. But I still for a long time did not realize that. As my life went on, those feelings inside of me kept continuing. I like to joke and say that, not joke, it is true, that I was alcoholic way before I picked up my first drink. I just didn't know it. And that bottle was but a symbol. It took me a while until I got into that part of my life. I went through high school. I had good grades in high school. I was a cheerleader. And I don't know the exact moment that it happened, but I remember when I was 18 that I was suicidal and I did not want to live anymore. And I had not picked up drugs or alcohol yet. When I was 18, everything kind of shifted and I decided that I was going to drink for the first time. I blacked out. I'm a blackout drinker through and through, because I drink to numb. I drink to escape. I drink to not feel. I drink to not have to deal with life. And I made sure that I drank that way every single time that I drank. I remember coming out of that blackout the next day, and I didn't know what it did to me, but all I knew is I could not wait to do that again. And that's what I did for the 8 years that I drank for. I was drinking all day, every single day. I was a very big pothead. I was smoking a lot of weed, and in the midst of all of that, I decided that I was going to dabble with some narcotics. And I didn't just dabble, guys. Like I said, I have a very addictive personality. I had tendencies way before I ever picked up my first substance. And it was to the point where I was doing an 8-ball of coke a day. I was taking acid 4 times a week. I was taking Molly the other 3 days that I wasn't taking those things. And it's honestly because I couldn't deal, and I didn't want to give my body time to be able to feel. And so I, instead of being able to physically harm myself, I tried to harm myself in other ways because I was too afraid to actually like hurt myself. I did that for about 3 years, and then I made the decision to just stop, and I'm grateful for that because it was killing me. But alcohol was always the present for me. It was never just drugs and no alcohol. It was always alcohol, everything else came into play. And then when I stopped the drug use, alcohol was still there. Alcohol was my best friend. And it did do what I intended it to do for me for a bit. Towards the end of my drug stage, I don't share this very often, but I had gotten into something that I swore I would never touch, because the other stuff just wasn't doing it anymore. I was smoking meth, and I swore I would never touch that, just like I swore I would never touch the other things, not realizing that everything else I was doing was cut or laced with those things. But that's where the end of my drugging had me. And I am a picker. I like to pick my skin. So when the scabs were showing up, I was picking at them. And it ended up hospitalizing me. I had to get hospitalized because I had acquired an infection in my finger. And I ended up having MRSA. And it was spreading so quickly, it almost took off my entire arm. And I was admitted immediately, had an emergency surgery, and now I just have like a little defect on my hand. But I still have my hand, I still have my arm. And I was still in denial that I had a problem. I still could not admit that I had a problem with anything. It was always everyone else, the world was out to get me, God was punishing me. And I could never turn the lens and take a look at myself or think to myself, like, Kendall, maybe, you know, maybe it's you. No, that was never a thought that crossed my mind. So like I said, I was able to kick the drug use, which I'm grateful for, but the drinking continued. I had my first DUI when I was 21 years old. I blew a .19, totaled my car. They thought I was dead when they arrived because of the condition and state that my car was in. I had a 30 rack of Coors Light in my front seat and it exploded on impact. So I got out smelling like I was actually drinking, which I wasn't. I waited a couple hours till I drank. But I was also one to drink on an empty stomach. And when I drank, I liked the strong stuff. I didn't like no girly fruity drinks. I was like, give me the 8% beers, give me the straight tequila. And I had to get a staple in my arm, was booked, but never did any jail time, and then I was cite and released. Of course, I got blacked out that night after that situation occurred, and I just continued drinking as such. I got my second DUI when I was 24, totaled my car again. Both times, guys, I was super grateful because I was the only car involved. I walked away with very, very minimal injuries, and no one else was injured or hurt. And I would always say I was a cat with nine lives because I like was putting myself in all these dangerous situations, and I was waking up the next day, and I was honestly so pissed about that. I was wanting my substance abuse to take me out, and it wasn't, so I was getting angry about that. And I had no idea that was God working in my life. Just to touch on God a little bit, when I was young, I did have a belief in God. I did go to church. Wasn't super active, but I definitely had a belief in God. And when I was 10, I would say that belief started to diminish because I was losing people that should not have left this world. And I blamed God for that. And I would say, if God was real or cared about me, he wouldn't have taken them away. And of course, every time I drank and used, I pushed myself further and further away from my belief in God. Back to my drinking escapades, just constantly putting myself in dangerous situations, again in adulthood, surrounding myself with people that weren't safe or good for me mentally, emotionally, physically. And still not being able to admit that I had a problem with it. I was like, oh, I'm just having fun, I'm young, you know, I should do it while I can. And not realizing that it was killing me. And I remember whenever I would snap out of my blackouts, like I was always constantly apologizing for my behavior when I was drinking. I can probably count how many times I had fun drinking. The other times I took it too far because I didn't know my limit. I didn't have a limit. Like I said, blackout drinker. So it was blackout or back out. And I wasn't backing out, so I was blacking out. I was also one to challenge people when I was drinking, and I would like to try to fight grown men. Knowing I'm this big and probably can't fight, but you know, liquor gave me some courage and some confidence that I was lacking when I wasn't drinking. The end of my drinking and what got me into sobriety, so my what happened, it wasn't the two DUIs. I was still drinking. It wasn't the house arrest that I had to do. It wasn't the two separate DUI programs that I had to do. It really wasn't a big old important thing. I had been drinking, and it ended up being a week that I was on a drinking bender. And I was in my room hiding from the parents because I was living in a sober household, and my one rule for living there was that I was not supposed to drink. And I thought I was so sly, guys. So sly. I'm gonna drink at work. I always worked jobs that I could drink at and be hungover at. And I was like, they're never gonna know. I'm so good at this. Have bottles in my bag that are clinking together. I have three drinks, and my voice octave goes up. Okay. Was not sly. Also, they're alcoholic. They're gonna know that I'm drinking. But of course, I was able to convince myself that they were never gonna know. I remember sitting in my room, and I decided that I was going to pray to a God I didn't believe in. The feeling I explain it as is I was tired. I was exhausted of pretending like everything was okay. I was tired of acting like something wasn't wrong. And I physically could not do it anymore. And I said, God, please help me. And in that moment, I was granted the gift of desperation. And I felt hope for the first time in my life in a really long time. I didn't know how to explain that, but I, in that moment, just knew everything was gonna be okay. I didn't know how or why or anything about that, but I knew that something was going to change, and that change had to start with me. I couldn't keep living the insanity, doing the same thing, expecting a different result. I couldn't keep trying to drink different things and pretend like I wasn't gonna have the same outcome. And I had called my mom in my room. Poor lady has heard this, I don't even know how many times, that I'm not drinking. And I had said, Mom, I concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. And I had never opened a big book a day in my life. I was raised in these rooms, but I had never opened a piece of literature. And in that moment, seeing the look in her eye, I knew that God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. And the next day I decided to go to a meeting. And, you know, I wasn't expecting to stay here when I got here. I thought that I would get a little bit of sobriety under my belt, get everyone off of my back, learn how to drink like a normal person, and then be able to go back out into the world and just behave normally. And fortunately, that's not what I found when I got here. I was terrified to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I knew you were all right and you were saving me a seat for a really long time. So I had a lot of shame coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but the love and care that you guys surrounded me with at my first meeting will forever be a core memory in my heart and my mind. I still didn't know if I was gonna stay, but you guys were so friendly and so welcoming and so loving, and you told me things like, we'll love you until you can love yourself, you can borrow my God, can you at least believe that my God believes? And I was like, oh, that's a concept. I can do that. I can believe that yours believes, but I don't have one still. And you know, that I was able to get through on that. I did get a sponsor within my first 48 hours of being sober. I had my literature already. I'm pretty certain I already had a commitment. And I had made the choice that I was going to put as much time and energy into my sobriety as I did to get drunk and to get high. And I have. That's what I've done. And you know, it wasn't easy, guys, and it took a lot of work. And without doing these steps and staying connected with all of you and having a sponsor and having those commitments, I honestly would not be standing here today. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the best thing that ever happened to me. I stole my dad's line. But it really truly is. And sometimes I can't even put it into words how much Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. I won't sugarcoat it. It hasn't been easy. It has not always been pretty. But through doing the work and staying connected and staying in the middle of the herd, even when I didn't want to, you know, I was brought back to my childhood belief in God. I felt God in the rooms and at the meetings, and I felt Him speaking through people. And through doing the work, I found my belief back, and I'm forever grateful for that. I am currently working with a lady who is absolutely wonderful. She has known me since I was a little girl, and she's like another mom to me. Like, it's great. She's my sponsor, and I know that's, at the end of the day, she's my sponsor. But just working with her and the care and the comfort and the guidance that she provides me with, that's why I am the person that I am today. And it has been beautiful getting to be in a program with my mom. Everyone always looks at us as like the mother-daughter duo, and it's honestly so much fun. It really is. But I also have to attend a lot of meetings to maintain my sobriety. I still have a lot of commitments, and essentially I just go back to the basics when in doubt. I start my day with God and end my day with God, and I talk to Him throughout my days. I'm always in contact with a lady in the rooms. And today I have a wonderful job because of sobriety. I work for the Orchid School District with special needs children. And it is truly the best job that I could have ever asked for. But I wholeheartedly know that if I was not sober, I could not do that job. And that's another thing sobriety has blessed me with is knowing my abilities and knowing my limitations. I will be honest, I am one that still in sobriety struggles with boundaries, like I said, not having control, expectations, and self-worth. Self-worth is a really, really tough one for me. I have done a lot of inner work, but there is still something in me that hasn't quite shifted in that respect. And I'm working on it. I have done all the needed changes in my life to make sure that I'm able to start prioritizing that. But what it boils down to, guys, is my heart is my best asset, but my biggest downfall. And I wouldn't change that for anything, and I wouldn't take back any of the things that I have been through. I'm a firm believer that I have been through everything so that I get to be here today. I get to. There's so many things that I get to do today. And thank you, Louisa, for asking me to speak. It's always an honor and a privilege to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in any way that I'm able to. And just to touch on a little bit more, oh my gosh, guys, I don't know how to talk for 45 minutes. just to touch on a little bit more of what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me in my life, I know I said I struggle with self-worth, but I have gained a lot of that back through being sober and working these steps and working with my sponsor. I do have a few sponsees that I'm working with. I have wonderful friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. People that I can call at any time of the day that will drop everything they're doing to come and support me or be helpful to me. And I will do the same for them. I will. If anyone ever called me, I would do the same for them. And that's another I get to thing. I get to show up today. I get to be present today. And those were things I could never do before. And it's all because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what time it is. Okay, let's find something to talk about. Okay, let's see. Huh? Oh, okay. So those commitments, thanks guys. I also do H&I when I have my commitments. So I secretary a few meetings. Any meeting I go to, I do try to be of service in some way, even if it's just putting chairs away, helping with coffee. And I go into detox and bring panels into the detox center. I used to bring in a panel to the TC House, which is a women's recovery home. And I love going to meetings. It's pr- probably one of my favorite things to do. And people are like, aren't you tired of that? Like, how long are you going to be sober for? And I was like, you guys don't get it. It's a lifelong, like, process. I know sometimes people don't recommend saying that at a public level because it scares people to know that this is an ongoing, continuous action program. And it is lifelong, but I am grateful that it's lifelong because, again, I get to continue growing in Alcoholics Anonymous and throughout my life. And every time I grow in life and grow in sobriety, my God consciousness grows and my love for sobriety grows. And there's no way I'm going to continue talking, guys. I do want to read something because I feel like it sums up, like, this program beautifully. I'm not a great long talker, apparently. So I would like to read something from page 89, which is in chapter 7. And it says, life will take on new meaning, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And I know that is definitely the bright spot of my life today. Being able to be of service to others and helpful to others and to care more about how I can be helpful than how I can be helped. And you know what? I'm not great at ending talks either. And I normally just say, and that's it. So guys, unfortunately, that is it. I am at a, like, yeah, I'm just going to ramble if I continue talking. So thank you guys again for being here. Thanks, guys.
Please give Kendall another round of applause.